It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hanson, your host. Well, this is the final segment in our series featuring the Tuolumne County Board of Supervisors. District 3 Supervisor Anaya Kirk is joining us today in studio. Supervisor Kirk, it's great to see you again.
Thank you, BJ. Great to see you as well. And also thank you to Clark Broadcasting for having us here and giving us our thoughts.
So before we get into issues affecting District 3 and the county as a whole, first off, your district boundaries. What does your area all cover?
So the easiest way to put it is basically the 108 corridor, starting at the top of the pass. You work your way down. You have the Dardanelles, of course. You have Pinecrest, Cold Springs, Long Barn, Tween Heart, Sierra Village, Miwok, Tween Heart. And then it kind of comes down, does a little bit of a fish hook near Soulsbyville, and then out Tuolumne City and Ponderosa Hills area. So it's huge as far as land mass. And then, of course, most of the district and also includes the U.S. Forest Service.
So one of the big projects recently in your district was the Tuolumne Road chip seal project. I know we did a news story a couple weeks ago. You were very concerned and upset about how that project was carried out. Can you kind of take us back to the beginning and explain what that project is and the issues that arose?
Yeah, so I mean, the reason why we have to maintain Tuolumne Road is because we have an MOU, an agreement with the tribe. It's that road, as most people know, is utilized quite heavily. So we have to keep the PCI index high on it. So every 5-10 years, we do maintenance on it to keep it at a certain level. We get that money from the tribe. Every year, we get a certain amount allotted to us, and we basically put it in the bank. And then once we have enough money, we do projects to maintain that road. So what I was told was that the chip seal project is a longer lasting, more efficient and cheaper way to go. So that all sounds great. So obviously, board, we're not engineers, but we hired consultants, hired folks to do the work. And then as everybody knows, when it was over, I think there was just a kind of a little bit of a surprise as far as the quality of it. I mean, I'm not an engineer, but I remember when the work was over, it just seemed like the chips in the road were bigger than what would expected. If you drive out J59 and you see some of the chip seal work out there, much smaller rocks. So right off the bat, it just seemed like a different product. But then, as we all know, anybody who drove on it, there's just issues with debris kept coming apart. And then they were doing patch repairs, things, just issues with it. So yeah, the video that I put out a few weeks ago, I was getting lots of complaints over the last few months, and forwarding those off to staff and, behind the scenes kind of talking about it. But I think for me, I was just, Christmas was coming and I got another broken windshield, spent $500 on a windshield. So I was just kind of had enough with it. And so that's why I put out that video, just to let people know, look, I get the frustration, we're working on it. So moving forward, the unfortunate thing is we're coming into the winter months. So it's just the time to fix it has passed. So this spring, I'm kind of limited on what can say because I know there's conversations going on between staff and the consultants and the folks who did the work, but there will be additional work done this spring and there'll be basically more to come on it. But yeah, the gist of it is, from my perspective, it's unacceptable work. And so needs to be corrected. The unfortunate thing is that there's going to be damage between now and the winter with people's cars and debris. And there is a process you could go in and fill out a claim. But if you know me, BJ, I don't like to send people in circles. It's hard to file a claim and to get a process because it's hard to prove. Even though it sounds ridiculous, we know there's debris flying up all over the road. It's hard to prove from a legal standpoint that debris on that certain time hit your car, And just so people know, I've had 3 chips and I haven't had one process or one claim process. And I chose not to. Just because I know the legality side of it is hard to get it processed, but then also I don't think it'd be fair if potentially I had my windshield fixed and other people didn't. So I'm just bearing the burden of the cost. And the main thing is we need to get it fixed. So
do you think there'll be anything done to kind of try to avoid those situations from happening in different places moving forward?
I'll tell you, if I hear the word chip seal on any project moving forward, I'm going to think twice, as a member approving it. So,
Yeah, I remember driving across Tuolumne Road, and I had a rock hit my windshield. Thankfully, it didn't shatter the windshield. I was fortunate, but I've driven it recently. I haven't had as many, I guess, another rock hit it. I know I've seen crews out there recently doing some small repairs. Do you know if some minor improvements were made?
Yeah, some minor improvements were made, and staff's requested that the folks who did the work come back and do sweeping periodically. One thing I've requested is to take a serious look at it, especially if we have any snow plowing. Hopefully, snow plowing won't pull additional debris up, but if it does, we've got to make sure we get it out of the way as soon if that were to take place. So there will be ongoing monitoring to see if more sweeping needs to take place.
Another issue we recently covered in your district is there's going to be a meeting next Thursday about economic development in Twainhard. What can you tell us about that?
I mean, the simple gist of it is we've hired Robbie as our economic guy, and we're going into each community. There's going to be one in Tuolumne City as well, but this one's specifically for Twainhard. And we really just want to hear from the folks who reside in that area, from business partners, business folks, what economic development means to them specifically. I mean, you know, at the county level, sometimes we have conversations of what it means to us in our county, but each we all know that each town, each little city has their own kind of their own identity. So the point of going up to Twainhard is to hear from them specifically as far as things that they think would improve. Little things that I've heard just along the way are so many people drive by Twainhard and they don't realize how beautiful of a little gem it is just off 108, especially if you're coming from the valley and you're just going up over the pass or going to Twainhard. So having some additional signage or something to show that Twainhard is there. We all know as locals, it's a beautiful place to pull off and go into, especially during the summer months. So we're just talking about what are some things, what does it look like to the town of Twainhard? Some things that we can improve on, some other things I've heard about or the impact of short-term rentals up there. So I guess to answer your question, we're not coming up there to talk to them, but more hear from them. And then those plans, those community plans, we can use. We're working with Motherlode Job Training and some other economic development. Well, there's some other economic development studies going on, and if we have these community plans, it could potentially bring in more grant funding. But I want the folks to know that, like, when we go to Twainhard, when we go to Tuolumne, when we go to your individual communities, we really want to hear from you, just so as we move forward and as maybe funding becomes available, we can identify specifically what things might help those pockets in the community.
You know, sticking with issues specific to District 3, which is your district, you know, the Twainhard Shopping Center looks like it's going to be revamped with some apartments. When that went to the supervisors, you were the lone vote against the project. What was your reasoning?
Yeah, I mean, the simple reasoning is, well, let me back up. We need housing, BJ. We need that shopping center has been, I've grown up in this community and I've seen it go from somewhat of a thriving spot to just desolate. And I did not want to vote no, but the reason why I voted no is because if you look at the property, the way it's been maintained the last 30 years, and if you look at some of the other properties that the owner owns, how they're not maintained, and in this little community, you know, how could you let people live and work in those conditions and then come to the board and say, we want to do more? I don't want more of that. What I want is, I don't want just housing. I want well-maintained housing. And our board has had presentation upon presentation about how we need housing, but we need well-maintained housing. We don't want Twainhard or any place to look any, we don't want it to look slumpy at all. So I voted no, and I pretty much knew it was going to pass hearing the other board members, but I'm firm on the fact that I want development, but I want people to develop and take care of the people that are going to be residing there. And not if you went into Twainhard, the pharmacy, or if you went into the market, I don't know how many times I've been in the market and the roof is caved in. I mean, that's where people get their food. And why aren't there permanent fixes? Why haven't things been addressed over the last 20 or 30 years? And so if you're coming to me saying you want to build, but you've shown a pattern of not maintaining it, that's why I voted no. And that, quite honestly, that's why. So, but it is going to move forward. So now that it's moving forward, I'm very hopeful that the individual who owns it and who may own it into the future after that does Twainhard right and maintains it well. Because I think it could be a great blessing for Twainhard if it's done right.
Need to take a quick break. We're talking to Supervisor Anaya Kirk, who represents District 3 on this weekend's Motherlode Views. It is continuing our series, talking with the individual Tuolumne County Supervisors. If you missed any of the earlier shows, you can find those archived on mymotherlode.com. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
We're talking with District 3 Supervisor Anaya Kirk in Tuolumne County on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Supervisor Kirk, as we ended last segment, we talked a little bit about apartments. I want to stay on the issue of housing. Some previous Motherlode View shows, your fellow board members Half and Brandon really talked extensively about housing as being one of their passions they'd like to see the county focus on. You know, where do you see kind of housing rank, and what are kind of the keys to finding solutions in that area?
Well, as far as housing and ranking, it's The more you look into it, the more the dots connect, obviously, to economic development and growth. When you look at any sector, whether it's at the hospital or it's teachers or it's grocery store employees, I mean, any employer up here will tell you housing is the number one issue. You look at the U.S. Forest Service, look at Dodge Ridge. So, I've had these conversations with the tribe even. As far as housing, how do we attract, doctors for Adventist Health or nurses to work at our hospital if you don't have the housing? So first of all, housing is, it's top-notch priority. We're going to have a board workshop here in a few weeks. And my guess is hearing the sentiments of the board and the community the last couple of years, I assume it's going to continue to be an issue. And I think the community is really hoping for change. My understanding is the last couple of decades here in Tuolumne County, it's been somewhat hard to build. I think that's changed with the last board and with this board. I think I know that our board, we hired Tamara, who's a housing specialist. I know Quincy and CDD. We've had several conversations. We've done the general plan. We're having Title 17 conversations. Our board has developed an ADU ordinance, accessory dwelling unit, so it's easier for people to build smaller units on their their lots with pre-existing homes. We've had conversations about lot sizes. Our board has and is going to continue to have these conversations, and we've done housing collaboratives, and I know folks in the community who are builders and folks, I'm trying to think of the agency, drawing a blank. But anyways, recently brought like these 11 items before the board to help with housing, to help specifically in Tuolumne County. So I know our board is working on some of those items we've already done. Some of them are in the works. Some of them we're probably going to discuss here into the future. But I think to answer your question, and I'm not sure if I am, so feel free to clarify, but housing is a huge issue. But also just the reality side of me. So Tuolumne County is doing, I believe, everything we can. And if there's things that we can be doing that we're not, people are bringing it to our attention, we're going to keep working on it. But I also remind people, we live in the most regulated state in the union. We live, we have the epicenter, California is the fifth largest economy in the world. We have the Bay Area a couple hours away from us. So when people say there's not housing, well, if you look at CDD's numbers, we have a lot of permits going out. The problem is those permits aren't for what people like to say affordable housing. You know, those are for big, beautiful retirement homes, which are great. People have the right and the option, and people are doing that. So we have permits going out. We have building going on. The problem is we don't have the workforce housing. We don't have, folks who work for U.S. Forest Service or for maybe the casinos or for some of the more mid-level positions, we don't have the housing for that. So that's where we're trying to be as creative as possible. And I keep telling people, it seems like some of the only affordable housing is what's turned into subsidized housing, which I'm not a fan of. So it's give me the right solution and we'll make it happen. But I remind people it's expensive. Codes don't make it easy. Labor's not cheap. You got the Bay Area right next to us. So prices of everything is just inflated right there. And what I've done in my life is just work hard, save, promote, do what you can, save. But it's getting harder and harder and harder. And when I think about my kids and their ability to save, I'm gonna instill them to save the same principles I have. But I also know you can't be a milkman anymore and afford a home. It's just not a reality. So we're doing everything we can. But I know our board has it as one of our top priorities, and we're going to continue to do so and continue to collaborate with the community to come up with any and every creative way. At the end of the day, there is going to be some housing. There's going to be some subsidized housing, which I don't like, but if we can get people in the units, then any way we can help to do that, it's worth pursuing.
So housing going to be another big issue this year among the Board of Supervisors. You know, getting back to your District 3, I asked you about several specific projects. You know, what else is happening right now in your district? Are there any projects or concerns or things like that you're hearing about?
When it comes to projects or economic stimulus stuff going on, I think what's really cool about my district is, like, if you just go back and look at Dodge Ridge, how it's changed ownerships, and you look at the changes there, and you see all the things going on with the mountain biking. Obviously, the Tween Heart Shopping Center is going to be revitalized here pretty soon. Even though Black Oak Casino, you know, the tribe is their own entity, it's still cool to see them growing and expanding with Elevate. And there's more things coming, and there's going to be more things coming to Tuolumne City as far as with the tribe. And then if you're talking about Tuolumne City, the township there, if you go there, like, on a Wednesday night, like I said, when we were talking about economic development earlier with the Tween Heart plan, there's going to be one for Tuolumne as well. But it's cool to see these little pockets in my district that are just thriving. And like I said, go to Tuolumne Township on a Wednesday night. It's a beautiful place to hang out and bring your family. Let me see. Tween Heart, again, they just had the groundbreaking on the Meadows Park. So that's going to be, when that project's complete, it's going to be just... Tween Heart is such a cool little gem. So I can't wait to come up with this plan and try and get more of the world to come check it out. And then if you look up the 108 corridor, like Mia's became new ownership, and Tween Heart, there's new ownerships with some of the other restaurants. Other things going on, obviously, well, here, we'll talk about real quick. I could probably spend the rest of the interview talking about Serral 2.0. You want to talk about a project. People don't realize how big of a deal it is to have, it's called CERL, which is Social and Economical Resilience Across the Landscape. In a nutshell, what that is, BJ, is Tuolumne County has been identified to receive tens of millions of dollars to clean up our forests, whether it's through controlled burns, whether it's through mastication, whether it's through clearing. It's creating, if you look at OES created a storyboard. That's another thing we could talk a lot about. But OES created a storyboard of all the work that's been done the last 10, 15 years, and the current work and the work into the future. You look at this horseshoe of all this work in Serral 2.0. We just finished one, and 2.0 is coming online here soon. We've created this horseshoe around Tuolumne County of work to prevent wildfires, mega wildfires. We've done so much in that arena. And to me, if you were to say what's going on in Tuolumne County, I think you could ask folks in the nation, and the number one thing they would say is the Serral project and what's going on with fire. It's a big deal, and we might talk about fire insurance later or segue into it, but that's why I'm so frustrated with the fire insurance issues, because if you look at what Tuolumne County's done, we shouldn't be in the situation we are in with insurance.
Yeah, I know you've been focusing on that fire insurance issue. What's going on with that right now?
Well, what's been going on with it is a whole lot of nothing, which is why we're frustrated. But there have been, I won't say nothing, there have been some strides. We had a meeting with Ricardo. We've had several meetings with Ricardo Lara's office, the insurance commissioner. The last one we had was, 2 months ago. Basically, he is saying that by the end of 2024, 80-85% of folks who are on the FAIR plan should be off the FAIR plan and absorb back into the private market. So how he's going to do that is kind of yet to be unknown, but basically they're trying to get insurance back into the market, the private insurance back into the market. My concern is that, and he says it should be about 15 to 20% cheaper once people go back to the private market. My concern is that if insurance has gone up 400 or 500%, 600% the last 4 or 5 years, what the heck is 15 or 20%? I'm still 400%, 400 and what, 25% higher, or whatever the equation mm-hmm. is. So, so that's what's frustrating is, you know, inflation goes way up and then it comes down a tiny bit and we think it's a win. It's not a win at all. People are losing their homes. People are having to move out of state. Fixed income folks, a lot of people are now self-insuring or not able to insure. Like if you own your home, people aren't paying insurance anymore because it's too expensive. And then we know folks who are looking to buy first-time home buyers, it's pricing them out. So I go back to Sarah 2.0. I go back to the OES. Go check out the OES storyboard. Go look at all the work we have done. What we're trying to relay to Ricardo Lara's office, and there's a process which we're communicating this, is insurance companies need to spend more time looking at the data instead of just drawing a red line saying this is a hot zone, this is a high fire zone. If you look at all the work that's been done, there's no reason why we should be 400 or 500% increases. We should be, sure, I get a little bit. We need to, you know, to offset the market, but so that's what we're working on, is trying to tell a story once we get back to private insurance about changing the rules, and that's really what it is, changing the rules of the game about how you assess folks and how you assess their danger when it comes to wildfires. Because I'm telling you right now, with the amount of work we've done, I'm confident we won't lose the 108 corridor. I'm confident that a mega fire, if it gets started out in the U.S. Forest Service like it did with the Rim fire, I'm confident that it won't come through. Now, we will have little fires. We always have little fires. We have the air attack base. We have great districts. We have Cal Fire. We have great folks that put out the little fires. But when it comes to a mega fire doing like what happened up in Paradise, I knock on wood, I don't think it will ever happen unless, you had some crazy tsunami-type winds, you know, blowing a fire. But other than that, hopefully I answered your question, which is we shouldn't be where we're at, and we're trying to tell that story to the state. And
we need to take one more break. We're going to end on that note. We're going to come back in just a minute. We're talking to Supervisor Anaya Kirk from District 3 on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We'll be back with more in just a minute. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we welcome you back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Our final segment with District 3 Supervisor Anaya Kirk, wrapping up our five-part series, talking with the individual Tuolumne County supervisors. Supervisor Kirk, obviously, homelessness still remains a big topic of conversation in Tuolumne County. Supervisors have purchased the Rafferty Court facility in Soulsbyville, the Miners Hotel in Jamestown, some properties in Sonora. What are your thoughts and opinions on how the county is addressing homelessness and your thoughts moving forward?
So when it comes to homelessness, I think I like to remind people this conversation has been going on for about four or five years. A lot of people in the community are getting frustrated. People that I would never think would get frustrated with the issue were coming to me saying, you know, what is the county going to do? And my first response was, I don't really want to do anything because at the state level, it's a mess. There's nothing that's working. There's huge components of law enforcement missing. There's issues with public health facilities, obviously been closed, not public health, mental health facilities been closed down for years. Folks that used to be in the prison system getting help are now, the laws have changed and now they're on the streets and a lot of those folks are on the streets and homeless. We have addiction problems. We have mental health problems. We have ACEs problems, adverse childhood, you know, effects of adverse childhood trauma. We have problems with fathers not being at home. So, I mean, there's lots of problems, right? So 4 or 5 years ago, I didn't really want to get into it at all. But people were frustrated and over it. So we did have some issues with pollution and waterways, which we started to address. with homeless folks polluting our waterways, and then we had concerns with fire. So we kind of got into it dealing with some of the effects of that. But the last, I'd say the last two or three years, the board started going down a path of looking specifically at the housing element, trying to get people into housing. I was against it. I was against it up until about a year and a half ago when I had a meeting with some staff and I saw some data which showed that locally we do have some programs which if we can get homeless people into and if they go through the program, there is success on the other end. There is permanent housing placement into the free market. And so I honed in on that and said, look, if we can provide services and hold people accountable and push them through, get them through a system, and at the end of it, they end up back in society, I'm completely on board with that. But we got to go. I want to support what works, and that's it. So when it came to the housing element of it, I did start getting on board specifically. As long as we're tracking the success, a big part that people know that I'm been very critical on and been pushing for is we have to have the law enforcement component. We have to have the accountability component. If it was me, I would have done that first. But it is what it is. We are working on that. We're working on a clean and clear ordinance. A lot of folks don't know that our hands are tied in certain areas. If we want homeless folks to leave a certain area, by law, you have to provide somewhere for them to go. So we're working on the clean and clear ordinance, and then the place for them to go is what's called the safe parking spot, which we're discussing. I would rather not call it a safe parking spot. I think we should call it like the legal parking spot. So we're putting the tools in place to be able to remove people, tell them here's services. And then if they don't go after the services, they need to be on their way. To date, I think we'll have about 120 bed spaces between all those places that you described. And if you look at the numbers, which I don't have in front of me, but if you look at the numbers, about half of the folks that we've put through the program have completed it on the other side. So great. We have a 50% success rate. Let's build on that. The 50% that are bailing out, we need to address. We need to address with the law enforcement tool, with the clean and clear tool, and with the legal parking tool. So that's where we're at in a nutshell, build on success. And then a big part for me, BJ, was being transparent. And how do we be transparent? How do I hold myself and the board accountable? How do I hold staff accountable? Everybody who's in this bubble of the homeless, you know, I call it bureaucracy, whatever you want to call it. And so that's where I pushed really hard to make sure that we had the dashboard. If you go online, you'll see a dashboard. It gives you all the numbers. And so what that will do is that'll give us live time where we're at, point and count. Not point and count, but services provided. We'll be able to look back on history. And what I would really like to do, I drew a red line in the sand a board meeting or two ago saying no more housing, no more purchasing for me. We've done enough. We have the numbers. Let's work the numbers. Let's get these facilities up and running. Let's look back in 2 or 3 years and see if we've built on those success numbers that I saw a year and a half ago. If we're building on them, great. And if we're successful in that endeavor, we really shouldn't be purchasing, I believe, any more housing. We should be moving people. I don't want people to land in Tuolumne County housing, homeless housing, and stay there. I want them to transition through. There is a few little nuances to that, which is that's what the board's doing, but then there's also state mandates where, like behavioral health, there are people who should be in mental health facilities. Guess what? Those aren't there. So we may have to have permanent housing for folks like that. So I try and tell people there's multiple different pieces of the puzzle, but I think just to summarize, I'm big on law enforcement, accountability, not bloating this too big, keep the numbers for housing small, work the problem, make success stories, and look back and see if we're successful. And if we are, we'll have a conversation then.
We need to end on that note. Supervisor Kirk, thanks for coming in.
All right. Thank you, BJ and Clark Broadcasting, for having me. Appreciate it.
Again, we thank Supervisor Anaya Kirk, who represents District 3 in Tuolumne County. I'm BJ Hansen. I was your host. We'll see you back next week for more Motherload Views.
You've been listening to Motherload Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherload. Motherload Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.